Welcome to the Image Doctors. It's April 12th, 2007, and I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Coming from still in the middle of winter here in Colorado.
We thought it was spring, but now it's winter again.
Where's global warming when you need it?
Not here.
Not here. So from the snowy mountain lair, we bring you your biweekly dose of Nikonians Talk Radio. We've got a great show for you lined up today. We're going to talk a little bit about finishing our review of the HP PhotoSmart Pro B9180.
Yep.
9180.
That's a printer.
That is a printer. And mm-hmm. If you were with us last time, you heard our preliminary take on the specs. And we've had a chance now to actually run it through its paces and make some prints. So we're going to talk about that in a little more detail. We'll also give you a little bit of insight on a new release of Photo Mechanic, one of our personal favorite image browsing and keywording program.
And it's got some very nice enhancements that were areas that we had actually talked about before, so a nice improvement.
And before we get going, we wanted to answer a little bit of listener mail, and Rick Williams had a question for us, and he wanted to hear more thoughts about Adobe Lightroom.
Right,
Rick, and you happened to be out pretending to take pictures a couple weekends ago.
I did. In addition to doing email at work and cell phone calls from work, but yeah.
Next time you go on vacation, just ditch the cell phone.
Yeah,
I think that's reason number one not to take your laptop on vacation. No temptation.
I might not have had a job when I came back, but you know.
Oh, piss! You know. But anyway, Rick, yeah. So tell us what you think.
All right. So just a little bit about the trip. Because it was a fun one. It was a trip out to middle of Utah to the Capitol Reef National Park area, Goblin Valley State Park, and a very brief excursion down to Bryce Canyon. But most of the stuff was in the Capitol Reef area.
Despite the title reef, this is nowhere near the ocean, right?
That would be true. Not anymore.
Utah's pretty landlocked.
Yeah, lately. Yeah. Lately it has been, yeah.
At least in this, you know, since the Pleistocene or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're not familiar with Capitol Reef, it's a beautiful park. You know, the same kind of, you know, incredible rock formations and everything that you find in places like Zion and stuff. But, you know, one of the nice things about Capitol Reef is it's not as heavily trafficked. And there's a whole vast area to park.
Shh.
Yeah, shh. Sorry.
It's out of the bag now.
There's a whole vast area where if you have just your average SUV or something like that, you can get back into some fairly pristine areas that are really nice and a good spot. And like I said, not as heavily visited. So that's where we went. It was a lot of fun. Did some shooting. And after getting back, one of the things I did is spent, you know, a fair amount of time with Lightroom, and actually I used it on my laptop while I was there too. I've always found that the best way to learn something, figure out, you know, do I want to use this or how do I use this, is to just do the immersion approach. You know, make it the only thing that you can use, and you're bound to learn a little bit more about its nuances and, you know, positives, negatives, things like that. So what I found is I still like it. I think it's the front end part of it, you know, which has to do with metadata tagging, keywording, the raw conversion process works very well. It's very quick. You know, if you're doing a lot of images, it's pretty nice. And some of the things that I thought I liked about it early on, like the way it handles black and white conversions and the targeted adjustments that you can do by dragging the mouse on different tones and colors in the image. All of that does work very well.
So you still like those features?
I still like those features. Yeah, those are good. It is a little bit buggy. You know, not an uncommon thing for a version one product, but it is a little bit buggy, and you do find it in areas that, you know, are fairly commonly used. But you know, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't like it, you know, kept me from doing things. It was just a little bit of an irritant at times. The, I guess, though, I still feel like there's some speed bumps, though. That's the way I would phrase them. You know, when you get slightly later in the process. And they're in the sharpening areas, the noise reduction areas, printing areas, things like that. And at least for me, I think I'll use it. I definitely will use it, but it'll be kind of an alternative or replacement for ACR a lot of the times, you know, for those situations where I'm using NAT as a raw converter. I think it's a little bit nicer than just using ACR. But for the back-end stuff, I'll keep using Photoshop. And you know, like I mentioned before, for the images that I'm going to, you know, make into bigger prints, finesse a little bit more, I'll probably start with NX still as the raw conversion engine. But it's a nice product. Since mine was free, since I had that RSP license in the past, it was an easy decision for me.
That's a good price.
Yeah, if you don't have it for free, you know, it's a little bit tougher call. I think it's a good choice for photographers doing very large-scale bulk processing, probably the best thing out there at this point for that. For photographers, you know, doing more individual images and stuff, probably better to stick with Photoshop or NX or something like that, I think.
And that brings me to what I did last weekend while you were off traipsing around Capitol Reef. I took the short drive up to Denver to attend a little bit of the Nikon School's advanced workflow, and I came in the middle of the afternoon. I went and was a guest of Nikon there, and met the instructor Reed Hoffman, and sat through their presentation on workflow, mostly in the I came into it in the after lunch part, so. And I did run into some fellow Nikonians there, which was an absolute pleasure, as always, to meet some of our listeners. And it was really interesting. One of the things he was doing was he realized it was a mixed audience, and he wasn't going to tell anybody whether you should use Photoshop or NX, but he sort of felt obligated to show off both products. The instructor, Reed Hoffman, I mean, he'll tell you, he's been using Photoshop for years and years and years. So he really knows what he's doing with it. And he took through a bunch of examples where he was going through and he would edit a photo, you know, maybe improve, and all this was with RAW. So he would improve maybe white balance and then do some maybe neutral density grad filter effect, you know, selective highlights, and he would do it in NX and he would do it in Photoshop. And you know, it's been a while since I really monkeyed around in Photoshop, but it really blew me away. It's not that you couldn't do anything in Photoshop, but the extra steps compared to using a single control point was really striking, I thought. You know, to get the same thing with an adjustment layer in Photoshop took a little bit more work.
Yeah, it just depends
equal
on what
quality.
You're doing.
There was no difference in what came out of it, as long as you know what you're doing.
Yeah, it just depends on what you're doing. There are some things that I find the control points really handy for dealing with skies and stuff like that. You know, are great with it, and some other things too. Sometimes I like using the masking approach though too, especially for burning and dodging kind of activities. It's the preferred way for me at least, but. You have to figure that out in your own.
Exactly.
I like using both.
To see a comparison.
Yeah.
And of course, his point was not to get rid of either one, because you still do need Photoshop. It sounds like you still need Photoshop, or would potentially want to have some flavor of Photoshop until all these little minor things get worked out of Lightroom, you know, for more control with like unsharp mask and things like that.
Right.
Well, that's cool though to you know, it sounds like we have a lot of choices out there.
Yeah, and they're getting to be good ones. I think with some of the rumored enhancements to Lightroom, it could be a really nice product in the future. And it is right now. It's just still got a few rough spots.
It's what you're going to have anytime something new comes out.
Yeah, but it's worth checking out.
So we spent some time today, and I spent some time earlier in the last since we last spoke with you, putting the HP PhotoSmart Pro B9180 through the proverbial paces.
And making a bunch of prints. We did a bunch of yours and a bunch of mine, both color, black and white and color.
Different papers.
Screwed up some.
I screwed up a few. took me a while to get I had a glitch when I installed the driver the first time, but I called HP support and they helped me out. They're telephone people. I'd rather not have to go there, but they answered the phone quickly and they got me what I needed. And it turned out that the printer, the paper color profiles for this printer are installed with the driver, and they don't go into any obvious folder for your profiles where my other profiles were stored. And for some bizarre reason, when I installed off the CD the first time, the printer profiles didn't install. And I went to HP's website. They didn't have anywhere to download them. But
probably a Mac problem.
Who knows what it was. But I had to do a manual uninstall, but then they walked me through it over the phone. I got the second time I reinstalled the newer driver, and it was fine. All the profiles for all the papers were there. And since HP sent us a whole bunch of different fine art papers to try out, you know, I wanted to make sure that worked. But I can report now that there are a nice full set of usable printer profiles with the printer. The driver is pretty straightforward. Not terribly complicated to use. Doesn't exactly tell you what settings you're using. You know, you get those vague categories. And I mean, I know Epson has this too on some of theirs, where you get the good quality, better quality, highest quality. And you don't know what that means in terms of output resolution. But other than that, I was very pleased with the output of this printer, especially for the color prints.
Mm-hmm.
We printed everything 12 by 18. Onto 13 by 19 size paper, because that's what we got to play with. And it takes about 5 or 6 minutes for a print to come out if you do what's called best quality.
Seemed very similar to what comes out of my Epson printer in terms of speed.
Yeah, that's about right. Now, there is a higher quality setting, the maximum DPI setting. That will take about twice as long.
Yeah, you really need to use those.
You really don't.
Yeah.
The only time,
use a little bit more ink and slow it down.
Yeah, the only time you need to use that setting is if it will eliminate some potential issues with microbanding. Mm-hmm. You turn off the high speed printing, or you use the maximum res setting, that'll a lot of times alleviate that problem at the expense of using more ink.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
let's talk pros and cons from what we've seen with the printer, because that'll help with some of the other attributes too. I mean, first off, you know, the images coming out of the printer were good. You know, once we sorted out the printer settings, you know, and the drivers and stuff, and that's something that you have to do for every single printer, figure out, you know, what the right profiles are, what the appropriate settings are for certain situations.
And I printed it out.
Came out good.
I printed out two ways. I printed out from Photoshop, using the Photoshop color managed workflow. And I also did a couple of prints directly from NX.
Mm-hmm.
I saw no differences between the print quality from either. So it was able to use the color management just fine.
Yeah. Now, one little tip that we ran onto when we were printing a black and white image of mine of a slot canyon, and it turned out kind of blue, was it does have a feature in the printer driver that you have to watch for. There's an option for using composite black as opposed to the black and gray inks. And you do not want to use that composite black if you're doing your typical black and white
print.
That's
right.
It'll mix the colors
together. And it's a little hidden.
Yeah, it's a little bit hidden. So just watch that, especially if your first black and white prints aren't quite as good as what you would have expected.
Yeah, you'll want to go under the ink tab.
Yeah.
When you're in grayscale mode there.
Once we had that set, the prints looked very good. But let's talk a little bit about pros and cons. You know,
Well, definitely the color print quality was very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
This was on both on glossy and luster paper, a lesser extent with the matte paper.
That's not unique to the HP.
But that I would agree that that's with any printer.
Right.
None of them particularly look vibrant on matte paper.
Just inherently the way matte paper is.
I did a color print on a canvas,
mm-hmm.
and that came out quite nice.
Yeah.
That was very good. So that looked really, really well.
Yeah. Certainly a big benefit with the HP right now, and I'm kind of thinking this may vary from country to country, because I've read at least some reports out of UK magazines where the price for the Epson R2400 and the HP were just about the same, but we were checking prices here in the U.S., and the HP is actually appreciably less. It was more than $100 less than the Epson printer, which is significant.
Right.
And so that's certainly an advantage for the HP. Ink usage, we weren't able to do what I would call a scientific test, but the feeling that we're getting is it's either using less ink or the ink cartridges are larger than with the Epson, because we were able to get more prints from what we can see than I'm getting from my Epson.
I would certainly think the ink cartridges, they do appear physically to be a little bit larger. Mm-hmm. But as far as what the capacity of those cartridges are, we don't have any information on that right now.
We could not determine that.
What we could tell you, though, is that we ran this printer and printed 20 12 by 18 prints. And after the 20th print, we have the light black ink is giving us a low ink. Not out yet.
No.
But it's giving us the low ink warning that it may need to be replaced.
Yeah, and the others still have a fair amount left. So
I'm guessing we could still get
a few more prints. Ink longevity seems good. One thing that we talked about last time, and it really is a nice feature, is that unlike with the Epson R2400, you don't have to switch out your matte and glossy black ink cartridges if you want to go between a glossy print or a glossy surface and a matte surface. And that's a nice thing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of kept me from using matte sometimes with the Epson. We like the paper tray design in that you can put a whole stack of 13 by 19 paper in there.
Yeah, it does protrude quite a bit from the front of your printer if you do that, but
yeah,
but that's to be expected with that kind of paper.
Yeah. And the quality of the black and white prints was good, our estimation. Certainly if you're used to the black and white prints coming out of a printer that mixes colors together in order to get grays, you're going to see a significant improvement.
Or a printer that only has one black. We didn't detect any issue with color casts once we've turned off the composite black mode and went to just the regular black and white.
Yeah, so you know, nice, healthy set of pros. On the con side, with the glossier paper, and when we were using black and white, we're doing black and white prints, we saw some bronzing. And now it was at extreme angles, you know, not the ones that you're gonna be looking at the print at if you're, you know, if you've got it hung on the wall or most any kind of normal viewing. But if you were to tip it down and look at it from a side angle, you can definitely see bronzing that isn't present there with the Epson.
And what we mean by that is that there's a metallic sheen. It looks kind of bronze in color.
Right.
Where you see, and we think it has to do with where the light black was being laid down.
Right.
That's what it looked like to me, at least.
Yeah, it's, you know, honestly, I wouldn't view that as a big thing because it is kind of under artificial viewing circumstances. But it's there, so we wanted to mention it. The Epson did seem to have a little bit better densities on the blacks, though. In the really dark portions of the prints, I'd say the Epson was a little bit denser.
Yeah, then the D-Max is probably somewhat higher. We did a test comparison with the same image printed on the HP, and then I printed the same thing, same size on Epson luster paper out of the 7800,
which
has the same mix as what you use.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a little darker in the blacks, a little richer in places, but on the whole, they were both very good.
Yeah. And, you know, most people wouldn't have probably even noticed it, honestly.
Yeah. This is one
they
of those.
They both look good.
If you're being picky.
Yeah. But we're trying to be detailed. Last time we did talk about no roll paper or prints longer than 19 inch, in size. That is a limitation. Yeah, not necessarily a huge one, but just be aware of it. Anything else?
Well,
the
only other weird thing, and it's, you know, this is just, I guess it's not really a con, but it's just one of those things that I found out that was a little bit cumbersome, is that if you're using paper that isn't some of the papers, like the matte papers or the canvas, you can't load those into the stack loader. You have to load them into something that's called the specialty tray, and this specialty tray is kind of like on the front cover of the printer. It's a hinged lid, and it folds down. And then what you have to do is you slide the paper in all the way manually, and the paper goes all the way in through the printer and out the back. So if you have your printer up against a wall or something like that, and you're intending to use matte papers, the heavier thickness papers, be aware that you're going to need to leave some clearance behind the printer, almost the same length as what you've got in terms of the length of the paper. So if you're feeding 13 by 19 inch paper, you need to make sure you've got about 17 or 18 inches worth of clearance behind the printer, which could present some potential issues, you know, for where you put the printer. If you're always printing on the glossy photo papers, then you'll probably never use the specialty tray, and it's not an issue to you at all. So it really just kind of depends. So can't really put that down as a major negative. All these printers have different ways of feeding in thicker media. I think you can put like 1.5 millimeter thick media into this printer if you use the specialty tray, which is nice.
That's pretty thick.
Right. So that's like a poster board almost.
Yeah. So to wrap everything up, I'm certain we would both give it a thumbs up.
Absolutely. Good printer.
Yeah, it's a very good printer. Very nice results. Pretty aggressive price point compared to the Epson.
But one thing you didn't mention was that the inks are more expensive.
Yeah, that's true.
We don't know how that relates on a per milliliter basis.
Maybe okay.
It might be just the same or comparable, but a full set of inks for this printer is going to run you about $250 at B&H.
Mm-hmm.
So about $32, $33 per cartridge.
Right.
But again, since we don't have the volume, that's hard to say what the cost is per milliliter. So that might not really be that bad.
Yeah, it may be about the same. Hard to tell.
But we like it.
Yep.
And so we'll be sad to see it go.
Yep. All right, next thing, PhotoMechanic. We've talked about PhotoMechanic in the past. It's been a while now. But I think it's safe to say both of us think it's probably the king of the image browsers out there. Very powerful, very easy to use, very... complete in its features. It's also compatible with lots of things out there, and I know one of the things that you like in particular is its compatibility with NX.
Yeah, it really is.
Friendlier browsers.
It's probably the friendliest browser for someone who's considering using NX and saving their files as NEFs.
Yeah. One of the few things about PhotoMechanic I didn't like, and it was true with virtually every other image browser out there, was that wasn't compatible on its rating system, you know, the star system, with products like Bridge, which is something I use a lot. And it was just frustrating, and it kept me from using PhotoMechanic as much as I might otherwise. Well, the new 4.5 release, which just came out a few days ago, fixes that.
Very cool.
It is very cool. And in addition to the rating system being compatible with Bridge, it's also compatible with Lightroom.
So there's the full star ratings, and mm-hmm. you can use them the same way. You just slide up the stars with the mouse, as well as the color ratings. And I think it even offers you the ability to convert your color ratings into star ratings.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you embed these things as sidecar files, then Bridge just picks that right up and updates it to display the number of stars that are so... You can go back and forth, mm-hmm. which is really nice if you're using, because I think PhotoMechanic is probably a better front end than Bridge in terms of ingesting and keywording and, mm-hmm. you know, it's a little bit easier to use. So it makes sense that if you're going to use Bridge later on in your workflow that you've got the same star rating system. Some other nice little new features in PhotoMechanic, and this is version 4.5, it offers really improved HTML export for making web galleries, including some Flash-based presets that are based on a Flash program called Simple Viewer that are really quite nice and incredibly simple to use. And just for fun, I tried that. I took 20, 25 or 26 images in a contact sheet, and these were all NEFs. These were not JPEGs or anything like that. And I was able to export them into a gallery, and you can put a title and change the colors and the font and all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. You can include some of the metadata. So I chose things like shutter speed, aperture, camera model that I use, but you could pick from the list, and there's a huge list of things to pick from. And then what I really liked and found is that it had the option for converting my images to sRGB and sharpen them. So I didn't have to save separate web-sized JPEGs. These were full-size NEFs. And what PhotoMechanic did was it just extracted the JPEGs that were already embedded in those NEFs from NX and made me a web gallery mm-hmm. in about 10 seconds. And then it was all in one nice little folder, and then all I have to do is upload that folder to my website, and I've got a nice Flash-based gallery. And there was a bunch of different styles. We played around with the postcard style, and which would be kind of neat for family pictures, but I went with the more traditional, just little thumbnails. But it was really, really nice. So I liked that about it, and I think I'm going to implement that now a little bit more in the future on my website. PhotoMechanic has added some more advanced IPTC support, something about hierarchical keywording system. And it's compatible with another system you got to pay extra for, but I don't know much about that. But
a controlled vocabulary kind of system.
And that's potentially quite powerful. If
yeah,
really
that's the whole
keywording.
Idea of, you know, using a system that's a standard for keywording so that you're using the same terms for the same kind of objects as other photographers.
Which has a lot of merit to it.
Yep. Especially if you're doing some things that could be important.
A couple other little things I noticed. I'm over here on the Mac platform. Photo Mechanic now has tabbed contact sheets. So you can have multiple contact sheets open in the same window and just click between the tabs and copy images back and forth between the tabs. I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm.
They've added more sort options. You can now sort by file type. And you have a manual sort. You can just drag the little icon, the thumbnails, into whatever order you want. I thought that was kind of cool, too.
Yep.
Because if you're building one of those website galleries and you want to put them in the desired order and maybe the shooting order is not the same order that you want, that'll help you. So lots more stuff that they've added to this, and they do listen. It's clear that they're listening to their user feedback. And
a nice set of enhancements.
So that's available from Camera Bits, which is www.camerabits.com, and you can get that. As we've said before, it is not the cheapest browser out there. It runs about $149, although if you've purchased this in the last year, this is a free update.
I think it is the best browser out there.
I keep trying to find something that's better than it, and I have yet to do that.
Yeah, it's pretty darn good.
So you know where we feel about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that brings us to our weekly prescription.
Yep.
I think. Is that where we are in the show?
I believe we are.
Well, since we were talking about Photo Mechanic, why don't you share with us our...
Well, we talked a little bit about it a few episodes ago when we were talking about workflow, but we thought it would be good to reiterate it and spend some more time on it. And that's the idea that if you are applying metadata to your image, and that's the stuff that has copyright information about you as the photographer, etc., as well as keywording, you want to do that as early in the process as possible. And if there is a way during the download process, and there usually is, to put in that high level metadata like the copyright and your name and your website and email address and all of that kind of stuff, the contact information, as well as any keywords that are applicable to the entire shoot, then that's what you want to do. So, for example, when I was out there at Capitol Reef and downloading my images to my laptop, I had them set up in Lightroom, and you could do this with Photo Mechanic and Bridge and lots of other things. Had them set up so that when they downloaded, they slapped in stuff that said copyright 2007 Rick Walker, where I live, and all that kind of good stuff. So that happened just with the download. And if I was downloading images from Capitol Reef, you know, just Capitol Reef, then I would put in that keyword phrase in there so that it was applied all at once. Once I got them on my laptop, then I went through and did the appropriate additional keywords for things that I wanted to do. It wasn't a huge amount, so it didn't take a long time. But the whole point is do them immediately, because then when you start creating TIFFs or PSD files or JPEGs or whatever, that data is still in there. And if you wait until later, then either you're having to synchronize TIFFs and JPEGs with the original RAW files, which is a real drag, or do them separately, or just go without it. So be sure to do that first if you are applying keywords and metadata tags.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. And, with the OS, the operating system search engines getting better, a lot of these search fields now will look at IPTC data when you're looking for files on your computer. So if you've got everything keyworded, if I go to Los Angeles for Thanksgiving and I keyword everything, that now I know that Los Angeles and Thanksgiving are those keywords, my computer's going to find it.
Mm-hmm.
Not just Photo Mechanic or Bridge or whatever. I can maybe even do it on the and find every image that's on my computer that has that keyword. So there's LA and I know where they are.
Now, one little problem that can come up is that different products use different approaches to the metadata and keywords and things like that and store it in a different manner. And if you're using some of the Adobe products, they'll put it in sidecars for the NEF files. Whereas with JPEGs and TIFFs, it's embedded in the file. If you're using Nikon Capture NX, it's embedded in the file and not in a sidecar. So what can you do if you're using kind of a smattering of things and you want it to all be consistent? Well, Photo Mechanic will do that automatically for you and sync them all up and embed stuff in the NEF and
create a sidecar.
Yeah. Netter, it's yet another neat feature of that product.
Well, yeah, you can tell we're kind of sold on that.
Yeah.
And we don't get any money from Camera Bits.
No.
Darn. Well. Oh, well. Yeah, we had to go out and
still a good
pay
product
for it just like everybody else. But yep. I do not regret putting down the $149.
No, it was
this product. It really was
good use of the
was
money.
Good.
All right, I think that's it for this week. So
be sure to tune in another 2 weeks to Talk Radio, Nikonians Talk Radio, and you can download all our podcasts from podcasts.nikonians.org.
And don't forget to vote for us and put in comments on Podcast Alley or iTunes. We do appreciate it.
And send us your feedback in the podcast feedback forums at Nikonians.org.
Yep.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.